Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Welcome in this week to the College Football Game Time Podcast. I'm Chris Goforth. The College Football Game Time Podcast is brought to you each and every week by ESOG, Engineered Solutions of Georgia, a proud partner of the Georgia Bulldogs. Glad to have you along with us and excited to welcome in our guest this week. It's Roddy Jones. You may remember Roddy from his days playing at Georgia Tech, and he's currently an analyst with the ACC Network. He has his own podcast. Well, I'm sure he'll tell you a little bit about that coming up later on. But Roddy, I'm glad you're a guy. You've been on my list of people that I wanted to get on this this podcast over the last couple of weeks. So I'm glad we were able to get the opportunity to be able to hook up for a little bit. And I want to kind of, if you're okay, I just want to kind of go around the ACC and get your thoughts on a few of these games and a couple of teams in particular. And I kind of want to start with what went on between Clemson and Florida State on Saturday. We're on the air Saturday morning when this story began to break and unfold and all sorts of stuff. And, you know, Clemson got a little, they got a little, little snarky towards Florida State, I think. And so do you feel like Florida State is setting a precedence where we may see other teams, even though the conference says, hey, you're okay to play, but other teams may say, wait a minute, we're not comfortable and we're not going to play?
Well, first off, thanks for having me on. I'm honored to be on the podcast. In terms of what went on with Florida State and Clemson, I think it was kind of just a myriad of events that led to what happened that were really specific to this. And for people that don't know, what happens is every Saturday morning, the athletic directors and the medical advisors for both teams get on a call. They review the data from the most recent round of tests, contact tracing, all that stuff. And they give a thumbs up or thumbs down on whether or not they're going to play. Well, the ACC had been all thumbs up this entire season. I had an athletic director describe it as the easiest call he makes all week. Like that's how automatic it is. But this week, because of the fact that Clemson had a player who showed symptoms early in the week, who did not test positive until Friday, actually tested negative three times prior to that Friday positive, because of the concerns with that Florida State had, the game ended up not being played. It was not Mike Norvell, the head coach at Florida State. It was not David Coburn, the athletic director at Florida State, that made the call. It was the medical advisor that made that call, deeming that he had concerns Florida State playing the football game. Now, Clemson's medical advisor obviously did not agree. Clemson's athletic director and head coach obviously were very, very public in their statements about wanting to have played the game. Mike Norvell was public saying that he wanted to play the game. But ultimately, it's up to the medical advisors. And the discussion can be made, does the ACC have some loopholes that were exposed in this because they were not able to figure out another time to play the game? They were not able to figure out if they could play the game on Sunday or Monday because of the two sides. Does the ACC need some sort of arbiter to help broker those? Maybe, there are plenty of things that we can, you know, sort of do in the postmortem of this, maybe changes that we can make. But ultimately, the medical advisor for Florida State deemed that it was not that all of his concerns or her concerns had not been alleviated to play the football game. So we didn't play. And then it led to the spicy exchange that you referenced.
So what's the role the conference plays? Are they involved in this decision-making between the two schools? Or is it something where the ACC pulls out completely and they say, you know, guys, work it out?
Yeah, the ACC has basically says, work it out. If you guys have the conversation to decide to play or not, there's an ACC representative on the call. But the schools have to decide to play, and both schools have to be comfortable with it. And like, logically, that makes sense. You don't want a school playing in a pandemic just because the league told them to. No, you have to have these schools who are ultimately responsible for the safety of their kids. You have to have them being comfortable with it. But I think the void in leadership here has caused sort of the back and forth that we've seen, because it was not rubber stamped by the league. It wasn't backed up by the league. It was obviously supported by the league. But now you get in the situation where Florida State's like, well, let's reschedule for December 12th. And Clemson's like, well, we're not going to pay to go back down to Tallahassee because we were there. We followed the protocols. And we feel like we should have played. And also, we have a game against Pitt that's had its struggles with the virus, and we're not going to commit to that until we know that our home game against Pitt happens. Because if that game were to get canceled, we would want the home game rescheduled over this away game at Florida State. So there you go. That's how we found ourselves in this situation.
So give me your thoughts. Do you think this game gets played or no way?
Here's what I think it would take to play the game. The league is going to have to step in and say, Clemson, you're going to play the game and we're going to foot the bill, because Clemson's not going to pay another $300,000 to go back down there. Florida State is not in a financial position to pay $300,000 for anyone to go play them, especially someone who's going to come in there and wax them up and down the field. So if you're asking me, like, the percentage chance, I think there's probably a better chance that they play the game than they don't. But there's going to be some hurdles that have to jump through. And if anything happens with Pitt Clemson this weekend, that chance goes out of the window. Clemson is going to fight tooth and nail to protect their home game.
You played college football. You're now involved in it from the media side, from the television side. Can you see, whether we're talking about the ACC, the Big Ten, the Pac-12, the SEC, whoever, not being able to fulfill their television contracts this year because they can't get whatever that X number of games in? Is that a concern at the conference level that we may be in trouble in terms of having to give money back to the TV networks?
I think it is absolutely a concern. At this point, I don't know that the ACC would be in that position. They've gotten so many games in. And to be honest with you, I don't know how it breaks out. I don't know if it's a total number of games. I don't know if it breaks out per sport or if it's buckets. You know, football, basketball needs to be this many or whatever. But, I mean, that's the reason the ACC went to 11 games. That's the reason they did the plus one. One was to try and, you know, keep the non-conference rivalry, the SEC rivalry that the SEC ultimately decided they did not want to do. But the second part of that is to fulfill your TV contract numbers. So the ACC went to 11, hoping that it could get to some number that fulfilled their contract. They've gotten enough games in where I would imagine they are close to whatever number they thought they would get. But across the country, yeah, it's absolutely a concern. That's why you have had schools have to be flexible with their scheduling. That's why in this league, in the ACC, Virginia had to schedule an 11th game against Abilene Christian, where they, you know, despite Bronco Mendenhall not wanting to play it, the league's like, no, you gotta do it. Abilene Christian is a terrible team. Like, it has nothing to do with anything other than getting TV revenue. And unfortunately for Virginia, it cost him their best player on defense, cost him his ankle because of TV revenue.
You spend some time with coaches every week in preparing for your game on the ACC network. What are coaches telling you about travel? Can you shed some light on what it's like for these guys in 2020?
It's hard. I mean, it's hard. Like, Georgia Tech went down to Florida State to begin the season. They took something like 10 buses. Where normally that's like a 5-bus trip. You're doubling the number of buses that you're taking. You're having to manage the flow of how players get on and off the buses, into the hotel, out of the hotel, because you don't want to get in a situation where through contact tracing, you're eliminating a large portion of your team. So travel is hard, and they all the coaches are just a little scared because of all the unknown variables that you're introducing, all the points of contact that you're introducing that have to do with travel. So it is very difficult. This whole season has been difficult for everybody. The travel part of it is no exception. And coaches around the country will tell you that that is one of the more stress-inducing things that they do.
Yeah, I think Clemson had 9 buses. Does that sound right? 9 buses Saturday. Yeah. Let's get to some on-field stuff now for a minute. And I want to get to Georgia Tech here in just a minute, but I do want to start, since we've just talked about Florida State, and we'll get back around to Clemson too. But How did Florida State get this bad? What's happened in Tallahassee that it has gotten to this point?
Well, so I'm going to rely a lot on the reporting that was done recently by Andre Adelson and David Hale that kind of detailed when this all started. And it really started after the 2013 season, where Jimbo Fisher was unpleased, displeased in the Florida State's perceived lack of commitment to increasing their facilities. I mean, they just won a national championship, and Jimbo comes and he starts asking for enhancements in facilities, and that wore some of the boosters thin, which soured the relationship between them. Now you couple that with the sort of entitlement that these new waves of players had coming off of the national championship. You're thinking, all right, I'm going to come in. This is Florida State. Everything's going to be great. And then a series of unfortunate events on the field and in recruiting. They missed on multiple quarterbacks. I mean, you look at the number of quarterbacks that they brought in that were dismissed from the program for whatever reason, and that ended up in various places. You look at guys that ended up on Last Chance U, you know. So you have that at the quarterback position. They did not recruit well on the offensive line as well. They've had a couple of other position groups that were sort of they were devoid of talent. You had a rising behemoth in Clemson that was doing all of the things that Florida State did not want to do. They were investing in facilities. They were going all in on football. They were not relying on the brand because they didn't have the brand to rely on. So Florida State quickly found itself in a situation where you have a disgruntled head coach, you have aging facilities, you have a front office and administration that there were some fractions in. The glue of that administration passed away from a terminal, I believe it was brain cancer, but passed away tragically. This sort of relationship, the guy who was the go-between between the administration and Jimbo. And then once Jimbo left, I think Willie Taggart came in and didn't quite know what he was stepping into, took the wrong approach with the team, lost the team very quickly. And then you factor in all of the misses in recruiting that you have, and now you have a very top-heavy, a very talented roster at the very top. But once you start to get into the depth, you see that there are a ton of issues. And in trying to get those issues fixed, you don't have the facilities that the people that you're recruiting against do. And that matters. So it is like the confluence of events that create nightmares. I mean, it is crazy how many misses it took to get to this point, but it just shows you how fragile these things are in college football, where you go from a national championship in 13 to being maybe a 2-win team in 2020.
Do you feel like there's a plan in place now from a facility standpoint, from a recruiting standpoint, for Florida State to get some of that back?
There's a plan, but like they have to raise the money for the facilities, and then you got to get the thing built. So I think if you're relying on the facilities to be the equalizer, that's not going to happen. You're going to have to do more with less than you're accustomed to start to show progress, and then hope that you can out recruit the people in your area, because yes, you're in a talent rich area, but Georgia owns the state of Georgia at this point. Alabama goes into Florida and gets whoever they want and picks them out. If Florida's not getting them, Miami's done a nice job in South Florida. Clemson's going to obviously compete with you for everybody that you want. And is Florida State going to win those battles based on a brand? All those other schools have brands too, and they've got the wins and the facilities to back it up. So it's going to be a challenge. This is a Georgia Tech level rebuild that's going on at Florida State. And it's going to take some time. You're going to have to be patient.
Well, let's go with Georgia Tech here for a minute. Overall, give me your thoughts on what you're seeing from Jeff Collins and the job he's doing as the Tech head coach.
Well, I think there have been some really positive signs. I think first and foremost, you point to the recruiting. He has done a nice job of recruiting to his scheme. And with the transition that they had from the triple option to Jeff Collins, while the players that he had were talented, they did not fit what he was trying to do. So now you're having to revamp thing. So from a publicity standpoint, from a visibility standpoint, from a recruiting standpoint, he's done a really nice job. They have gotten better in areas on the field, but they're still deficient at a number of areas. And I think you would have liked to have seen more development from Jeff Smith over the course of this season. But he's still a freshman quarterback, and he is going to be the quarterback of the future, you would guess. So you have some pieces to work with because you see the talent at quarterback. You see, although the inconsistency is certainly there and there's going to have to be growth, you see the overwhelming talent at running back with what Jahmyr Gibbs has done. And you see some flashes on the defensive side of the football. I think the offensive line has played better this season. So there are some pieces to work with. The issue with Georgia Tech is that is a large portion of the league is getting better. You look at Miami, North Carolina being the biggest examples. Boston College is getting better. Pat Narduzzi's done a nice job at Pitt. Who knows what you're going to get out of Virginia Tech. Virginia's been consistent. So there's a lot of programs around that are getting better. Can Georgia Tech get that much better faster with the rest of the league also getting better? That's going to be the big question.
And Tech hadn't played now in almost a month. How tough is it? And I know they're practicing and I know they're still working every day, but it's a little different mindset when there's a little, maybe a different sense of urgency when it's a game week. How hard is it to get it cranked back up after being down the way they have these last couple of weeks?
It's got to be incredibly hard. I mean, you're talking about a group that has to sit on the sidelines while preparing for a game in two of those weeks as well, and then having it canceled. It's got to be really hard. The question is, how much better can this young team get during that, and how have they managed that? There's no playbook for it, as Jeff Collins has said a number of times. So I think mentally it's probably really draining. And the game that they play this week against Duke, if they get it in, which is always the big if, right, is going to kind of feel like a bowl game because of the layoff that this team has had. So it'll be interesting to see what they put on the field when they get back out there, because it's unprecedented.
I want to jump around here for a minute. Do you see coaching changes happening in the ACC? We've had one in the SEC this year. Do you get the sense? I have felt all along, like there for a while, I didn't think we might not see any anywhere, regardless of how the season played out, just because everybody's facing such a revenue shortfall this year. Do you see coaching changes coming in the ACC?
I don't. Now, that doesn't mean that something can't happen. This is college football. Like, somebody comes in and is unhappy and cuts a check and the numbers look right, like they'll go ahead and do it. But no, I don't. I think the most likely, the one that you're looking at the closest, would be the two, would be Virginia Tech and Syracuse. Syracuse is not in a financial situation to do it. They just extended Dino Babers through 2024. And without knowing what the buyout situation is, just don't see John Wildhack doing that at Syracuse. Virginia Tech is the other one. And Justin Fuente has kind of been under some fire for a while. He's being all of the best recruits in that state are being poached out. The results haven't really been there. And this is kind of the trend that we've seen over the last really 3 years. So there's a lot of sort of displeasure with what's going on in Blacksburg. But Whit Babcock, I mean, this is a program that had Frank Beamer for 30 years or something like that. So was Whit Babcock all of a sudden going to change his tune and say, nope, Justin Fuente, after four, you're done? I don't know. I don't really see that happening. Now, maybe in a year or two, if things don't improve, but it's a first year defensive coordinator in a COVID year, where you've had so many injuries on the defensive side of the ball, couldn't install what he wanted to do. I just don't really see it happening. So I don't think the ACC is going to go that route this year.
Virginia Tech gave up 47 points to Pitt on Saturday. Does that tell us more about the Pitt offense with Kenny Pickett back in the fold, or does it tell us more about Virginia Tech and just how far they've got to go defensively?
I think it says more to the second. Pitt's a team that has been good on offense when Kenny Pickett has played, but they have been brutal at running the football against everybody, and they ran it pretty well against Virginia Tech. And this Virginia Tech defense has been the most disappointing part of the team this year, with all of the starters they had returning. Now, yes, Caleb Farley opts out, and that hurts him. Jermaine Waller's been hurt. That hurts him. They had severe limitations due to COVID early in the season, where their entire secondary just about missed the North Carolina game, and that obviously hurts them. But as this group has gotten healthy, they haven't really gotten better. So that is the concern that you have with them on defense. I think Pitt's a good team, and that offense, when it gets hot, can put up some points. But they've struggled in the red zone against just about everybody this season. So their success against Virginia Tech is a little bit alarming.
There was that massive coaching change a couple of years ago in the ACC. Justin Fuentes came into the league. He was a part of that. Bronco Mendenhall was a part of that. And the guy that I really thought could have the biggest difference and the biggest impact was Dino Babers. I was excited at that hire for Syracuse. Where has it gone wrong? How did it get off track? How is their offense with Dino Babers as a head coach this bad at Syracuse?
Well, I think you have to look at recruiting. Like, as Dino Babers has gotten his recruits in, the offensive line has gotten significantly worse, and he has not been able to find a quarterback. So those are indictments on what that program has done. And again, like I talked about Florida State being a big-time rebuild, this is Syracuse too, because they are bad on the offensive line, although they have been better in the run game than they were a year ago. And they are probably the worst at quarterback. Yeah, at this point, they're the worst at quarterback in the league. So, you know, Dino Babers has long been thought of as an offensive genius. They're going to have to show improvement, because since Eric Dungy left, they've just been not good at all at that position. Now they've also had some inconsistency at receiver and catching the football. And that's what happens when Taj Harris is the guy that you rely on. And the sad thing is, like, their defense has actually been pretty good this season, especially compared to what we thought they would be. So Tony White's done an excellent job in his first year. They're a top half of the league defense in all of the per play metrics, yards per carry, yards per attempt, yards per play. They're a top half of the league defense, despite playing more plays than anybody else in the league. So the defense has been good. It's been a pleasant surprise, but as surprising as the defense has been on the good side, the offense has been equally, if not more surprising, on the bad side. So one of the worst offenses in the country.
What's the relationship like between Dave Doran and NC State and those fans? I know it felt like a couple of years ago they were ready to run him out. He flirted a little bit with Tennessee and ended up staying at NC State. And I want to say that maybe he got a an extension out of that when Tennessee was trying to talk to him. They've got a chance now. They went out. They legit could finish with 8 wins this year. Are they happy with Dave Doran at NC State?
I think overall, if you look big picture at it, probably. But NC State's kind of always been the team that, like, can't get over the hump, even when all the ingredients are there. And in their 9-win seasons that Dave Doran has had, you just look back on them, and there's a lot of what I like to call empty calories. And it is impressive to win. They have the potential to win 7 games in conference this season. That is impressive. Beating a top 25 team in non-conference and Liberty, a good team, that is impressive. But they were also the beneficiary of the easiest schedule in the ACC. They missed Clemson and Notre Dame. They got boat raced by the best team that they played in North Carolina. The other best team that they played, Miami, they were close, but couldn't quite get over the hump there. So in terms of marquee wins, if you're going to sell me, hey, you know, Liberty is your marquee win, or to open the year is your marquee win, it's a tough sell. But that being said, winning 7 games with 10 conference games is impressive. So despite the fortunate scheduling, they did what you expected them to do with the schedule, which I think should be commended. So I don't know how they feel about it, but I would imagine if I could sell them on, hey, just take it, then I would definitely do that, because Dave Doran's done a nice job.
North Carolina and Notre Dame, they battle Friday afternoon. Tell us a little bit about this matchup. Sam Howell against Ian Book. How do you see this one playing out? I think North Carolina can score. Can they do enough to be able to hang with Notre Dame? Can they get the stops on defense they need?
I have not seen anything to suggest that they can. Because, I mean, you look at what this defense had a week ago against Wake Forest. They gave up 1 million yards and 53 points. And Notre Dame, despite being down 2 starting offensive linemen, is still going to have the best offensive line that they've faced all season. And it's not even close when you look at who they played. They're still going to have the best defensive line that they've faced all season. It's the fastest defense that North Carolina has faced. And North Carolina is really good at taking advantage of mismatches. Now, the running backs are still going to create a problem. The question is, like, if Notre Dame's able to hold North Carolina to, let's say, 30 points, even 35 points, do we have faith that that North Carolina defense is going to get enough stops to keep Notre Dame from outscoring them? I don't know. I don't know how you can have that, especially with the way that Ian Books played down the stretch, the way that Avery Davis has emerged in the slot, the way that Ben Skoranek has emerged as a big play receiver. And then when you look at the tight ends and what Michael Mayer gives him in particular, I don't know that North Carolina can quite match up, especially they're going to try and create havoc and get after Ian Book. He's been really hard to sack. He's been really hard to get near. Just look at that Clemson game. So I like Notre Dame in the game. I think that that the inconsistencies that we've seen from North Carolina are kind of going to be laid bare in this one.
Yeah, I think it's been fun having Notre Dame in the SEC, or in the ACC rather. Can you see them relenting and giving in? And I know the ACC would love to have them as a full-time member in football. Is there any chance it could happen after this year?
It will not happen immediately after this year, but I have been told by multiple athletic directors that there is a path to making it happen. And honestly, after this season, with the ratings that Notre Dame games have gotten, with the raised profile of the league that Notre Dame has brought, I mean, you're going to have Clemson Notre Dame, which is going to be one of the top rated games of the year. You're going to have Clemson Notre Dame 2, which is going to be one of the top rated games of the year. You're going to have Notre Dame UNC, which is going to be one of the top rated games of the year. Would that happen if it was just Clemson in this league? I don't think so. And you add that to Clemson, Miami, and the games that Clemson's brought that are top rated. So I think the ACC should make it a priority to do what Notre Dame to do whatever they can, short of like completely selling your soul, to get Notre Dame to join the league in football. And again, there is a path to make it happen. You may have to do some things with TV contracts. You may have to do some things with investment in football in the league and commitments to investment in football in the league. But like, that would be the biggest win in ACC history, more so than getting Florida State in the early 90s. It would be getting the biggest brand that the conference has ever had to join the league. That'd be huge.
You mentioned part two of that saga of Clemson and Notre Dame coming up. Can Trevor Lawrence make enough of a difference if he plays to get Clemson over the hump against him? How different would round two be in this fight?
It would certainly be different. Look, DJ Uiagalelei played really well in round one. So can Trevor give Clemson a boost? Yeah, I think he can. But is he going to play that much better than what DJ played? I don't know. That's a high bar. I mean, Trevor is certainly one that could clear it. But I think to expect that is a little unfair because, again, DJ played fantastic, made a couple of mistakes down the stretch. But all in all, I thought he played pretty well. I think the additions back on defense would be more impactful. Having James Skalski back, having Tyler Davis back, having Mike Jones back would help stopping that Notre Dame run game enough to maybe make the difference for Clemson. So I think it's going to be fascinating. I think it's probably a coin flip either way, because I think that much about Notre Dame as well. But is Notre Dame going to be as good without two of their offensive linemen? How much time their starting center and starting guard going to miss? That is a big question as well. So we'll see. I'm really excited to see it though.
Do you feel like they're both playoff teams?
I do. As it stands right now, yeah, absolutely. Like if you have a one loss Notre Dame team who's only lost to Clemson and vice versa for Clemson, I think they both deserve to get in, especially when that game did not happen without Trevor Lawrence. Now you can't, I guess I should have kind of hedged a little bit in saying it also depends on what happens in the rest of the country. Because let's say you have an Alabama team who loses to Florida in the SEC championship game. You've got Alabama, Florida sitting there with the same scenario, although Florida's loss would have been to Texas A&M. You get Alabama and Florida that sitting in there in the same scenario. And then you have an undefeated Ohio State team. And then you have what's going on in the ACC. Like, would the committee just go ACC, SEC because of the number of games played? I don't know. And which team would be on the outside looking in? I would imagine it's one of the ACC teams, because when you stack up the schedules and who they've played, I think the SEC would probably win out. So none of this happens in a vacuum, but not knowing, all other things considered, not knowing what's going to happen, I think both of these teams deserve playoff consideration if they were to end up both with one loss.
Roddy, thanks so much for the time, man. Before we let you go, take a minute and tell folks what all you've got going on. I know you got a podcast and some other things. Tell folks how they can find you.
Yeah, absolutely. So the podcast is ACCAF. It stands for ACC All Football, or whatever you want it to. But I put out a couple of episodes a week with that, previewing the games, reviewing the games, covering the big stuff in the league. I'm on Twitter at Roddy Jones 20, and on Instagram at the same handle. I do some radio for SiriusXM, and I'm an analyst for the ACC Network, usually doing the noon game on the ACC Network. So those are all the places where you can see or hear me.
Roddy, I appreciate it, man. I hope we get a chance to do this again. I'd love, you know, we get close to round two of that Clemson Notre Dame game, man. I'd love to get you back on again.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's do it. Would love to. I appreciate you having me.
Roddy Jones, check him out. And again, appreciate him giving us a little bit of time. This has been the College Football Game Time Podcast, brought to you by our friends at ESOG, Engineered Solutions of Georgia. They are proud partners of the Georgia Bulldogs. Happy Thanksgiving. We'll see you back here again next week. So long, everybody.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.